It's the Food Talk Show, produced by Channel Radio. It's the Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Hello, Sue. How are you?
Hello, I haven't been here for 2 weeks.
I know, it's a long time, isn't it?
I've missed it. So I've got loads to say in a whole hour. Loads and loads.
Oh, good.
Good.
I'm really pleased. We have missed you, though.
I thought you might have done. I've also got a really good pre-record that I did a few weeks ago with our producers, Christy and Lucy, and we thought it was a really, really good idea to go to Micropub that happens to have.
No,
happens to
really.
Have,
how on earth did you think of that?
Yeah, we did. It happens to have 43 gins in there, so we thought we'd
hold on. Whoa.
Pop along.
43 gins.
Yeah, 43 gins.
Is that different types of gins or the amount of units of gin you consumed?
It's the number of gins, and it's run by this lovely lady called Jane Sharp. So we've got like 20 minutes of pre-recording that, although we were in there for a couple of hours.
I was going to say, did you try 43 gins? And if you did, how did you get home?
No, we decided we'd do 9. Right. We thought that would be probably
nine.
The top end of what we could imagine. So we got a really good sort of recording from that in the middle of the show. So that's great. We've also got Michael Minch Dixon from Snacked. He's going to tell us all about this fruit jerky he makes. I was going to wait till later to try some, but I have to say I've sneaked some already.
Oh, no, you weren't. Don't you don't you tell porky pies to our listeners. You've been munching on those for ages.
No. I just couldn't help it because it looked so nice. And then we've got Emily Herrero and Simon Day from Umi Noodles. And they've got a really interesting product I want to talk about. I have already tasted these because they've had such great reviews anyway. But they've bought some for you to taste today, Paul.
I like a noodle. Me.
I do too.
And I can see their boxes with the chopsticks on there, and I'm itching to get at that. I'm a bit of a Wagamama fan, me.
Yeah, you see, I do quite like noodles. And have you been to Pho? I think it's called Pho, actually.
Pho.
The correct pronunciation is Pho.
Pho.
But have you been to Pho, P-H-O, a sort of chain of... You don't go past Dartford, do you? Often.
Dartford?
No. They don't go that far, do you?
What, London? No.
Yeah. No. Okay, so these chains, and I really, really like them. And they just sort of feel healthy, but I don't know why that is. And they do lovely broth, a bit like Wagamama. Really, really fresh coriander, vegetables.
What's it called
in
again?
Pho.
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 But I call it pho because it's P-H-O, but apparently you pronounce it pho.
Like it.
And then I used to work with this guy who was doing the advertising for, do you remember Pot Noodles when they did these ads in, I think it was about 2002, and they called slag of all snacks, and they got into real trouble with the advertising standards. Do you remember it?
Yeah, don't talk to me about Pot Noodles.
Why? Please don't tell me you eat them.
My eldest son, who actually got married on Saturday, when he went to university, he made me buy him from Costco, what's the big warehouse place?
One of them.
Yeah.
Carry on, Paul.
I bought three pallets of pot noodles, right, which he took to university with him. And when he graduated 3 years later, guess what was under his bed?
Hopefully three pallets of pot noodles.
Three pallets of pot noodles, which I had to bring all the way back and then throw away because they're all past their sell-by date.
Yeah. Well, this guy used to work in advertising. They said that their target market is students. You've just proved that.
Yeah.
And teenagers and things. And obviously you just add hot water. And he was trying to think about, you know, what is the advertising slogan? How can we pitch this? And he was saying that to him somehow it was something naughty and something a little bit dirty that you have.
Right.
You know, that's how he described it. And that's where they came up with all those sort of slogans for. But to me, that tells you what sort of food it is, really. And I think more and more people are rejecting that sort of I don't even know what's in it, frankly, and going for much healthier stuff. So it's going to be really interesting, I think, talking to Emily, because noodles are taking on this feeling now of not being a horrible, dirty snack, but actually being something quite healthy.
Right.
And I do like a bit of Wagamama, a bit of pho. Mm. Don't you?
I do indeed.
Really healthy vegetables. Mm. Mm, lovely. So, shall we have a quick chat with Michael?
Sorry?
Shall we have a quick chat with Michael?
Yeah, we can do. Yeah, let's do that.
Shall we do that? Or do you want me to go straight to my gin?
I think we might have to go straight to the gin, actually.
You like that gin. You're dying to hear it, aren't you?
I want to find out about that, and then we can talk to Michael.
Great, okay, that'd be brilliant. And then we can eat his snacks and eat the noodles.
Yeah, okay. Shall we have a go at that?
Yeah. So I'm at the indoors pub. It's a micro pub, and it's my local micro pub, which I'm pretty chuffed about, and they do lovely beers. So at the moment, they've got some Four Candles is a brewery, and they've got Sandgate Session Pale Ale, and they've got some Canterbury Tales Brewery, Gad's Brewery, but I'm not actually here for the beer. I'm here for the gin. And Jane Sharp, who runs, I think she owns this place, she's... sort of was doing loads and loads of beer, and people kept asking for gin, and now she's got 43 gins to choose from. Jane, can you tell me, there's been a real resurgence in gin, hasn't there? Did you mean to put on gins for your micro pub, or did it just sort of happen by accident?
It evolved, because I was determined it wasn't going to be a blokey ale pub, because I knew the area that we were in, we would have lots of couples. And traditionally, it's the men that want to come in and drink the ales and the women that don't. Sounds a bit sexist, but that's the way it tends to be. And I particularly like the spirits. I like vodka, I like gin. And then it just happened that everyone seemed to be talking about gin. And I'd got a couple of gins in, one from Yorkshire that I didn't want to get the general run-of-the-mill gins in. So I'd got a couple of nice gins in anyway.
So by run-of-the-mill, you mean like Beefeater or Gordon's or any of that lot?
Gordon's and things like that, yeah. Although I've got some Gordon's because some people like it. But yeah, I wanted something different, a craft gin or something that you couldn't get in most places. And that's where it started, really.
And that's a real business decision for you. So you decided to do gin. Why not wine? I mean, I can see that it's a good idea, because actually if the guy wants to go out for a drink and the wife's going, oh, no, come on, stay in, but actually she can go and have a drink as well, I can see that that's a business decision. But why not wine?
Because I'm not really very good at wine.
It's a good enough reason. Good enough reason. So I'm joined by our producers, Christy and Lucy, who, funnily enough, suddenly wanted to come and do some work late on in the evening, because we're going to taste loads of gins at Jane's micropub. And what we're going to do is we've asked Jane to choose 9 out of the 43 that she does here. And they're all British and they're all quite distinctive. So we're going to work our way through them. Because somebody's got to do it. You must admit, haven't they, Lucy?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
it's a hard job.
Notice you volunteered straight away. So first of all, we're going to taste Martin Miller's gin, which has got an England and Iceland flag on it. And that's because it's an English gin, but it uses Icelandic water. And it's got the overall winner from the Good Housekeeping Institute. So you can't get better than that. The Good Housekeeping Institute says we should be drinking this gin, girls. And Jane's just served this with a couple of strawberries in it. And we've got a little bit of tonic. Go on, Lucy, you try it first and tell me what you think.
Oh, that's lovely. You can really taste the strawberry. Try it.
It's got two half strawberries in it, but is that the gin itself, or is that something that's just bringing the flavour out?
Try a little bit, sneakily, without the strawberries. But it really brings the strawberry flavour into it.
Nice, actually, because that gin finishes a little bit sweet anyway. So the strawberries really do bring that out. See, I really like that now, Christy. Do you?
That really is nice. And it is, it's that sweet bit that you get at the end. You get the little hit of the strength of the gin, and then you get the strawberry, and the sweetness complements it nicely.
So we would recommend then that if you're drinking Martin Miller's, which is getting some really good reviews at the moment, that you have a couple of bits of strawberry in it, because it makes all the difference. And now we're going to have Heyman's Old Tom Gin. This is an authentic Victorian gin with a really old-fashioned recipe. I'm quite interested to see if this is very, very different from the others.
It hasn't any lemon or lime or anything garnishing it, just ice, tonic and gin. And I got such a huge hit of lemons. It really has got a big citrus smell about it. Let's taste it. I can definitely taste it as well.
So if you like citrusy in your view, and that's actually quite a strong botanical flavour, isn't it? It's, you can taste quite a lot of herbs as well, actually. Mm. But if you like a sort of lemon edge, I would imagine if you added lemon as well, then you're going to get a really nice lemony gin and tonic. And now we've got some blue bottle dry gin. And this is distilled in Guernsey, in very small batches. And Jane's recommending that we have a little slice of orange with this, actually. It's supposed to be quite juniper heavy, but also a hint of pepper. So we've got a couple of ice cubes going in there. Out of these, Jane, blue bottle, these are quite old-fashioned traditional gins, I guess. Blue bottle, Heyman's, Martin Miller's, which is your favourite?
I would say the blue bottle.
Oh, just about to try that. Okay, jolly good. A slice of orange is going in there.
Oh, the orange really makes it, doesn't it?
Don't know, I haven't tasted it yet because you're the first one to taste it. Pass it along, will you please?
Oh, it's lovely.
Is it?
Mm. Really refreshing.
Oh, that's completely different from the other two that we've tasted. Mm. They say that you can get gorse flowers. I don't even know what gorse flowers are. But I can imagine that that's a bit of the taste you can get in there, actually. Quite herby. Definitely brings the orange out. Slightly bitter, I would say. Whereas the Martin Miller's had that sort of sweet strawberry. Mm. That one's a little bit bitter, do you think, Christine?
Yeah, definitely. And I can't think what the herb is that I can taste. But it's quite a strong, woody herb.
It's almost like rosemary.
Yeah, it is.
So, again, if you like something slightly orangey, slightly sour... Mm. Very, very herby. That's blue bottle, and that's Jane's favourite.
Drink.
So we're just about to drink this one, and we'll put a tiny little slice of orange in it. See if you can taste that Sambuca, Christy, that Jane was talking about.
Okay. It's a bit like... I don't know why I made that noise. Do you know what? It's a bit Christmassy with the spices, and I get like the final little touch at the end of a bit of licorice rather than the full-on shot of Sambuca that I don't do anymore, but used to.
So almost like you're having a little bit of a mulled wine there, sort of thing.
But much more refreshing. A really nice long summer drink, I think.
Lucy's just tasting it now. Is she going to say the all-time classic, yes, I like that, which is what she says to all of them?
Oh, it's lovely.
Oh, it's lovely.
Oh, it's lovely, is what she says to all of them.
That really makes a difference with the orange in, I think. I want to keep drinking it, so I'm going to put it down.
Okay, I'm going to have a taste of that. Oh, I see what you mean by Christmassy.
Mm.
Mm.
Mm. Like it or not?
Yeah, I'm just trying to... It's quite a complicated taste, actually. And I can see tea there and a little bit of black pepper. But surprisingly refreshing. That'd be really good as a very long drink, I think.
Yes.
You know, with loads and loads of ice, a highball glass, actually quite a lot of tonic, and a really nice long drink.
Mm, I agree.
Right, this is the Mason's.
So we're going to taste Mason's, and Jane's recommended this one. How do you actually choose? You've got 43 gins. How do you choose your gins, Jane? Don't tell me you just taste them all and then decide.
I actually taste them all, obviously, like market research. But the Mason's gin was recommended because it's friends of friends who make it up in Yorkshire. Oh. And it's becoming really, really popular and is doing very well with it. And it was the first gin that we had in. That's why I wanted to have gins in here. He also does a vodka. And I love lots of the gins for different reasons. But if I want just a gin and tonic and lime and ice, I have a Mason's.
We're going to try that now, then. So Christy's tasting this Mason's with a slice of lime and some ice. And come on then, Christy.
That is quite dry. And this is going to sound really odd and probably no one will agree with me at all, but a little bit of sherbety.
I've got something happening on the roof of my mouth, I have to say.
And maybe that's what it is. I felt like just a little burst of kind of soury... It must be all the botanicals that are in it, but I like
it. Slight fizz to it, I think.
Yeah, a fizz that's nothing to do with the tonic.
Yes, I would say that one's not as powerful or as characterful as some of the others. But, so I would say if you were going to have just a normal gin and tonic, actually that's delicious, but it's not strong. It's not got loads and loads. You can't taste loads and loads of different things in there. It's just a straight up gin, you know, really. Just refreshing, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, the flavour is still with me now, though, after having... Which I haven't had the same with the other gins.
It's got a very long aftertaste, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Nice aftertaste, but a very long one.
Yes.
Now, obviously, we've got through a few already. Now we're going to go for some fruity sort of flavour gins. And in front of us, we've got a great fruity one. which is called Williams, which I've had before, which I think is very good. So I'll be very interested to see what Lucy and Christy think. We've also got Pinkster and a celery gin. And we've also got a very famous rhubarb gin. And this gin's particularly good because Jane says this is actually driving people to her pub in search of it. It's, you know, it's that good. So from a business perspective, that's a pretty good idea. This Williams pink grapefruit gin is so strong smelling. You can smell it as soon as it comes out of the bottle. It's really incredibly strong. So it'd be very interesting to see what it tastes like. I'm not a great fan of grapefruit, but I do like grapefruit in drinks. Lucy, what do you think? Please don't say your normal comment. So just try and think of some adjectives.
Something
else, yeah, please.
I can really smell the grapefruit. I love grapefruit anyway. I could drink grapefruit juice all day long, but I'm just going to try it. I'm trying really hard not to say
it's lovely.
But it is. It's really... It's refreshing. It doesn't taste too strong either, does it? It's a real sort of smooth... summer drink,
smell,
I think.
I really can smell that. And there's a slice of grapefruit in there anyway.
Oh, it's not as sweet as I thought it was going to be with the grapefruit. I know grapefruit's not sweet, it's bitter. But where it was so strongly, the smell was so strong of the grapefruit, I expected it to be a little bit sweeter. And it's actually quite dry and you've got that bitterness in it that I actually... like. It's lovely.
I know Jane's it's a really good, it's a favourite here, isn't it, Jane? And in fact, last time I was here I had a little bit and you've already got through two bottles since then.
Yes, I've we've got people who come in saying they've been dreaming about it all day and can't wait.
Oh my goodness, right?
Yeah, it's quite serious stuff.
So we definitely recommend Williams Pink Grapefruit Gin. We'll put all the names of these on the website anyway.
Pinkster. This is quite a subtle flavour of raspberry, and they rather than add the raspberries afterwards, they actually steep them in the gin. And then what they do is they sell the raspberries off because they're full of gin. They're called boozy berries, which we use in there as a garnish.
I see. So you've got the Pinkster gin, which has been steeped with raspberries. I love raspberries. And then they take the raspberries out afterwards, probably a little bit squishy, and then you reintroduce them as a garnish. What a good idea. Oh, yeah, there's a jar here, and it's called Boozy Berries. And they're made by Pinkster, the Pinkster brand as well. Recommend those together. Can't wait to try this one. Do you want to taste that first, Christy? I know raspberries is one of your favourite fruits.
It is, and I do. I've tried raspberry gin before, not this brand, but it's one of my favourites. Oh, I can definitely get the raspberry note at the end. But still, that lovely dry aftertaste that you get from gin, it really comes out. It brings it out lovely.
See, I actually think juniper, which is the base of most gins, actually goes very well with sort of raspberry, strawberries.
And that's what you're getting.
Yeah, and a little bit of the citrus. But actually, I prefer the berry flavour with junipers, because obviously juniper is a berry as well. But Lucy, are you going to do your normal comment?
No, I'm not. Oh. It's really nice.
It's quite,
Christy, can you remind me not to bring her to any of these, but just can you just produce the program
really
and not
like gin. But the berries have turned a really lovely pink colour, haven't they? And it's quite a dry but still fruity. It's
I've got a real problem with that in that it doesn't taste alcoholic. I think that's one of my problems.
Yeah.
Whereas, do you remember some of the first ones we were tasting? I was thinking, my goodness, that's really strong. That doesn't taste strong at all. So that is a bit of a health warning.
How strong is it?
Usual, is it? Is it usual 40%?
Yeah, I think it's 46.
It's 46%. Please don't tell me it's 46%, Jane. Please.
I think that looks beautiful, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
37.5.
So it's 37.5%. So it's as strong as most gins. But if you don't like the taste of alcohol, that's probably a good one for you. Pinkster. Pinkster.
Definitely.
That's my favourite.
Is it?
Mm. Yeah.
That was my favourite at the gin club. Yeah, at the gin club.
Mm. I can still taste that on my tongue. It's funny enough, is it a front on my tongue, that one?
Yeah. There's too much zest in it or something else.
It could be the zest as well, but
I whereas
the one that I've completely lost the plot over, which was quite citrusy, was all right at the roof of my mouth.
Yeah. What
one was
that?
That was
very,
was
very
that?
Juniper.
Was that the Mason's?
Might be the
Mason's,
actually.
Yeah, you said you could feel it on the
top
of your mouth.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Right,
we're
going
for
it. We're going for Ginzu. Ginzu
or the rhubarb?
Oh, rhubarb.
Should we? Can we end on the rhubarb?
Yeah,
I was going to say.
Sneaking
suspicion
it's going to be my favourite.
I think I was looking online about it. I saw it advertised online because I'm constantly trying to look for different things, and
It is in English. It's made in England, but then they've got some sort of agreement with Japan, and they have this the sake mixing with the gin, with the dry gin. So it's quite a distinctive taste.
Sake and dry gin. Mm. And are you getting a lot of guys coming in drinking gin, or is it just very girly?
No, we actually are getting quite a lot of guys drinking the gin. They do tend to have it with very little tonic, so with ice, more of a shot. But yeah, we've been quite surprised that we've had quite a lot of men drinking the gin.
I mean, it's a very hot day here today, you know, and I think I'd love to come in here and have one of those beers, although I'm obviously being forced to drink gin at the moment. But there's only so much beer you can drink, I think, and it's the volume.
Yeah.
And are you finding the guys are drinking some beers and then going on to the gin when it's sort of Friday, Saturday night?
Yes, I think so. To be honest, we probably get people who just only drink the real ale, and it's slightly different to lagers, so it's not too, you know, it doesn't fill you too much. But then we've got certain people that come in here, and we just know that they're going to end the evening on at least three or four gins that they try all the new ones.
But it's nice.
So we're just drinking this one, which is a combination of gin and sake. I would say that's got lots of citrus notes and definitely a little bit of sake at the end. I don't know if you like sake. Have you had sake, Christy?
I have had it before, but a long, long time ago, and I'm not an avid sake drinker. But with that, the citrus, with one of the other gins that we had, it was really strong citrus, you know, that kind of got in your on your taste buds. This is a very gentle touch of it, and then it must be the sake that just gives it that slightly warmer, fuller taste.
It is quite warming. Now, of all the ones that I've had, I've actually, you know, when you haven't had anything to eat and you drink something, suddenly it warms you up.
Yeah.
That feels like that quite a lot. So that's called Jinzu, Jinzu. Just tasting Warner Edwards, Victoria's rhubarb gin, and Jane's saying that this is probably the thing that everybody comes here for. I've just tasted it. It tastes incredibly strong. It's no stronger than any other gin. It's a normal 40%. But, wow, what a taste explosion. It's just literally blown my head off with rhubarb, I think. That is definitely my favourite since we've been here. And all we're having it with is a little bit of water at the moment. Lucy.
Very rhubarb-y. When you smell it, it smells quite sweet. I wouldn't say it's a favourite of mine, I think, because it is a lot sweeter than the others. It's still really nice and flavoursome.
See, I don't taste it's actually sweet. I do taste that it's quite fruity. It doesn't end sweet. I think.
No.
I hate it when you know you get alcohol and it actually ends sweet because it's sort of cloyy.
Aftertaste.
Yeah, it hasn't got an aftertaste. No. Chrissy's got her head buried in the glass there.
when you smell it, it smells like it's going to be quite really peppery.
Yeah.
Pepper, rhubarb, quite a nice smell. But when you taste it, Lucy's right, you have got that slightly sweeter edge, but like you said, it doesn't end with it.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Now, Jane's got some pomegranate and basil mixer, which she won't tell us where she got it from because it's top secret. So can we have a bit of pomegranate and basil mixer with the rhubarb? Yeah.
It's in there.
It's in there. All right, go.
That's what I can tell the basil.
I can smell that basil. Oh, God, I just so love that. I really love that, yeah. When we finish recording, I might have another one of those, a proper one, instead of just tasting little bits.
I wouldn't call it that little.
No, okay.
We've got a few of
them. Yeah. And so we've tasted 9. We're going to put all those on the website. And obviously, it really does depend on your particular flavour, you know, the things that you really like. Christy, any particular favourites for yours that you can remember that we've started through the 9? Oh, can you remember any?
The celery one that we had, that was really nice with the zest. And I also really liked the first one that we tasted, which was
Martin Miller
with that strawberries. It really was lovely.
The Mason's Yorkshire gin is definitely one that you know, just if you wanted a good, you know, sort of straight gluggable normal gin. Lucy, your favourite?
Well, Christy's just stolen my 2 favourites, but my third favourite was Pinkster Gin with the Boozy berries, definitely. Especially she can eat them afterwards.
Raspberry profile.
Delicious.
Okay, well, it's been a really great pleasure to be at Indoors Micropub. And if anybody's in the sort of Kent area, anywhere near Folkestone or anywhere near Hythe, or you're going on to the Channel Tunnel, you really do have to pop in here. There is some great, great, great beers, really good local beers, and also some great ciders. But for us girls, we're here for the gins. Thank you very much, Jane.
Thank you.
And my 17th favourite, Lasso, was the...
I was really struggling after 9. I hadn't had any lunch. And Jane was so hospitable, and I was struggling with my words at the end. She does these great... what do you call it, sort of cheese platters and pork pie. And I had to stuff a couple of pork pies down me after that. But it was great. It's a great place to be.
Well, it really sounded like a lot of fun.
Yeah, they're such a nice couple as well. Really, really, really great. And I think it's a sort of place, which is what a micro pub is about. It's small, it's local. They don't want people on their phones all the time. And when you go in there, even if you went on your own to read the paper, you'd end up making a friend and having a chat with somebody.
But it's also this gin thing. A gin suddenly made a huge comeback. It's really popular at the moment, isn't it?
It's great. And I obviously, as you know, I drink vodka, gin, whiskey, whatever.
Anything, really.
But yeah, anything. But I find that gin takes the flavours better than vodka. Mm. It's much more subtle. And I think this real tradition of botanicals and having 10, 20 different flavours in there that people are really cleverly mixing now. Gin is a really good base for that. Mm-hmm. And of course, it feels very British.
I don't know if you know, I heard a rumour, because you know, I'm teetotal, I don't drink, so I heard a rumour that Anno Distillery, the gin distillery over at West Kent in Paddock Wood, are just about to produce a whiskey. First English whiskey.
The problem with whiskey is obviously it has to mature for so long. I mean, gin you literally can make almost immediately. And that's the great advantage. And that's where so many springing up. I'm thinking of making some at home. But I really enjoyed going there. And I'm hoping, well, that is going to be my local. Aren't I lucky? You can't get luckier than that. Indoors, your local stuff. Should we move on to that? Because I can talk about gin forever.
Yeah.
So before we talk about gin, we were talking about noodles and all that sort of stuff. So we're definitely going to talk to Emily. But I know you wanted to get the gin interview out the way.
I want to get that done and dusted.
And now you want to concentrate on food. Yep. So we've got Michael Minch-Dixon in front of us, and he started up this company called Snacked. Mm-hmm. And I'm still drinking gin. That's spelt S-N-A-C-T.
That's easy for you to say.
It is easy for me to say. And it's a fruit jerky. Mm-hmm. And he's making that from all that surplus wonky stuff.
Wonky fruit. Ugly stuff.
Ugly fruits.
Yeah.
And originally he started collecting surplus fruit at the London's wholesale markets.
Right.
Doing that sort of like 2013 or so. And he was making snacks in a kitchen in Hackney. And now he sells them at markets and places across London. He's just saying earlier that even Korea, I think I'm going to ask him about that in a minute. He managed to raise some money on Crowdfunder. And now he's making this fruit jerky by the ton, rather than the kilo.
Wow.
It's incredible, isn't it? But we are seeing, aren't we, Paul, people taking, food waste, which is criminal, and trying to find things to do with it. And that's exactly what Michael's doing.
I think the whole thing is this rebellion about processed, supermarketed, perfect food and all of that kind of thing. People are rebelling against it. They're not having it anymore. You know, real natural things that grow do not grow in uniform shapes and sizes. They just don't.
Not necessarily. So, Michael, welcome to the show. And tell me, how did you come up with the idea of this? Why did you start this?
Yeah, thanks for having us. Well, we started out from the side of food waste and looking at it and saying, this is crazy. How is it that in a generation and a half, we go from food rationing to wasting a third of the produce in our country? And
that's
globally,
that's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah, and well, globally, it's the same problem. So we started from the perspective of what can we do to tackle food waste and how can we do something meaningful for it. And that's how Snack came about. And the brand is Snack and Act. And so we wanted to do something that was acting and making a positive difference. It was just a sort of journey of one, is there produce out there which is really good quality that we can use to make a healthy snack? And then can we make a snack that people want And that would people be interested in eating something that has this rich story behind it?
Buying it. Yeah. They need to buy it, don't
they? Yeah, exactly.
And you set this up with your best friend. Is it Alana? Have I got that right?
It's Alana, yes.
Yes. So how did you meet? And I bet you both must be mad. Were you both agreed with each other that we should do this?
Yeah, so we actually went to school together in Brussels. And then down the line, we ended up doing the same master's degree. And it was at an alumni event at the for the master's that we were... just chatting and saying that we should start a business and wanted to do something in food and sustainability. And at that point, started being interested in food waste and slowly got on to looking at what we could do and got some ideas together. And at some point just decided, let's take the plunge and see if we can make this work.
Shall I tell you a little bit of background about Michael? So he went to the International School of Brussels,
right,
which is obviously where I met Alana. He's got a degree in economics, as you would, and then he studied for a master's in environmental technology at Imperial College. Wow. Just thought you want to know that.
He's a bit of an overachiever, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think so.
Cool. So what I'm fascinated by, Michael, is what you did first. So did you just rock up somewhere in Belgium and go, I'll have 47 kilos of apples, my good man? Or how did it work?
No, so we the first thing that we did was go to New Spitalfields Market the evening. And it was hilarious. We got there, we're kind of a bit nervous, not sure what to expect. There's forklifts driving around everywhere, all these people like shouting really quickly, and this whole kind of trading scene that it just never seen before. And then sort of sheepishly going up to people like, so do you have things that you're not able to sell? And we went around the market and found that actually there was lots of people who had, at the end of the trading day, produce that looked really good that they were just going to discard. And so we thought, well, great, let's start using this up.
And very briefly, was there a particular theme behind that produce that wasn't very good? I mean, was it bruised fruit or just fruit that was the wrong shape, or what was it?
So at each stage of the supply chain, there's different reasons why fruit is being, or food in general, is being wasted. Mm. By the time it's at the wholesale markets, it tends to be that they'll have produce, some whatever left over, and they know that they've got a new shipment of berries or whatever coming in the next day. Okay. So there's no need for them to keep these older berries. Yeah. So they just look to get rid of them.
How do they get rid of them? They literally just throw them away.
It's obscene. If you go to the back of
they just put it in a black bin bag, presumably, and
so a lot of this will end up in anaerobic digester.
Okay.
But yeah, it's essentially going to waste, and so much of it is good, healthy nutrition. Mm. Whereas earlier in the supply chain, now we work with farmers and pack houses directly, and the reasons there for produce being thrown away is completely different.
Yeah.
Much more around the specifications that supermarkets have for produce. So if an apple is a bit too big or a bit too small, then it goes to waste.
Sure.
Just now we've been working with a farmer around here and taken 100 tons of apples from him. He was really unlucky. A hailstorm came at the wrong time and peppers the apples with hail and damages it. Mm. And then they know that they can't sell it. So it's easier for them just to leave it on the trees as opposed to doing something with it. And so we come along and buy it from them and then make our healthy fruit snacks.
And that's good for them, isn't it? Obviously, they're getting some money, something that they wouldn't have got any money for at all.
Exactly.
I'm presuming. And you're making it into fruit jerky.
Fruit jerky.
So you've got three packets that you've very kindly put in front of us. And we know how much Paul likes the taste stuff as it comes in here.
Mm-hmm.
So Paul, we've got apple and raspberry, and we've got apple and mango, and we've also got blueberry and banana. And the actual jerky is very thin, almost looks like thin bits of chocolate, because it's that sort of colour, isn't it? It's quite dark brown colour. Mm. The raspberry. Do you want to have a little taste and tell us what you think?
I do. It reminds me of something, and I can't put my finger on what it reminds me of at the moment,
each
in
packet,
terms of look and shape.
Each packet is 62 calories. Sorry, 62 calories. And I guess this is, as you say, it's a snack. It's a healthy snack.
Yeah.
I presume it's part of your five a day. And if you are trying to be good and not go for the crisps and not go for the chocolate, I presume is that the target market you're aiming for?
Exactly, yeah. So it's, you know, sort of, in between meals, you're looking for a little bit of an energy boost and just something sort of sweet to snack on.
Let me do a bit of kind of unboxing here, because I'm just looking at the packet, which is interesting in itself. I've just tried the apple, blueberry and banana fruit jerky, which is lovely. But the packet itself says it's vegan, it's gluten-free and it's 100% fruit, and the bag is compostable. There you go. And the jerky's not bad either.
But there's a sort of very thin square slices. Mm. Nice and chewy, I think, and you get that little bit of sourness that you get with fruit, but you get that nice fruit hit, sugary hit as well. So quite nice. The texture's nice.
As as a snack, it's really interesting because it's got some substance to it. Yeah, normally with a snack, you buy snacks that have no substance to them at all. They're just eating for the sake of it. This has got some substance to it, but it isn't, you know, it isn't a meal. It isn't overly filling. I actually really enjoyed that.
Yeah, so in it, each bag, there's a whole fresh apple that goes into it and then a handful of berries or the other complementing fruit.
So how do you do this? What do you do with it?
So, I mean, part of our philosophy is to kind of respect the fruit as much as possible and process things as little as possible. And it's 100% fruit. So we're taking whole fresh apples and then blending them in with the other fruits.
Do you cook them? Are they raw? How does it work?
So we soften them in a steamer very quickly just to soften them. And then we just blend it. And then we have a sieve that takes out the pips and the stalks. But all the skin and all the goodness of the apple is there. And then similarly, we put as much of the other fruits in as possible. And
how do you make them into...
What do you do? Do you dry it then? Is it dried like you would any other jerky?
So yeah, we make a smoothie and then lay that out on baking trays and then dehydrate it.
There's
no added sugar, no preservatives, no additional flavourings. It's just the fresh fruit.
So basically, you've taken it from a pulp, so to speak, flattened it out and then allowed it to dry.
And then cut it in squares.
Cut it in squares, yeah.
Like it.
I've got Emily here from obviously Umi Noodles. We can talk about in a minute. Did you have a quick taste of that, Emily?
Yeah, it was delicious.
You think that's okay?
Yeah, really.
I know that you're interested in the packaging because obviously if you're going to go to the extreme of doing these amazing things to try and help the environment, you can't then put it in a plastic pack that's going to last 150 years in landfill. I mean, that's quite ridiculous. Getting that packaging is quite difficult, and I know you're struggling with packaging as well, aren't you? Just to try and find the right sort of materials that extend the brand and say the right things, you know, it's quite hard.
Absolutely. Our product is all about sustainability, so we would, like, in the future, we'd really like to find, you know, the most sustainable way of packaging our products and stuff. It is really important. Absolutely.
So where did you source your packaging? Because it's quite hard to find compostable packaging.
It is, actually. We went on a journey to get there, and the first iteration of this product that we brought to market was in a traditional plastic film because we just couldn't find the materials out there. And I would say it's probably the only time that Alana and I have really had an argument about Snacked. And Alana was saying, I sort of refuse to bring plastic waste to the market. And how can we be tackling one form of waste and then bringing another problem to the market? But ultimately, we decided that it's important to tackle food waste. It's important to do something about it, and we will find more sustainable packaging as and when it becomes available. And we're really happy to come across a company called Tipa, who are making this film. And what's special about it is that we're able to get the same shelf life as we got on the traditional plastic film. And also, I think it prints really nicely, so we've got nice vivid colors, which helps us tell our story really well. But the amazing thing is that you can put it in your home compost bin, and then in sort of 25 weeks or so, it's completely gone.
Right. Okay.
And so we're the first company in the UK to bring this material to the market.
And where's it from? Where did you get it from?
So the company is Israeli.
Right. Okay.
So it gets sent over from there.
Fabulous.
Well, that's really good. And as you say, if you're going to do it, it's really important that you have the ethos throughout all of your operations, although that's not quite as easy as it sounds.
No, it isn't. And, you know, we pay a little bit more for our packaging than we would plastic packaging, but... Well, we're Snacked, and it's Snack and Act, and we wanted to act on packaging waste as well, and I think it really ties the story
absolutely
together.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And where is it available? Because obviously the next thing you have to do is we'll get it into wherever.
Absolutely.
So what sort of channels are you looking at?
So we're on Ocado. We also work in the food service sector, so lots of offices have our product. We're in as nature intended source market, so kind of nice shops around London. But further and further afield as well, we see it getting picked up.
Well, I'm okay with that. I'm thinking if I was going out in the car, you know, seeing clients and was a bit short of some sort of, you know, snack, I'd much rather have a couple of packets of that in the car, I think.
It's the kind of snack that I think I'd like to see more of in pubs and bars and things like that. You know, you go in a pub and the only thing they have is peanuts or crisps, and both of those are designed to be salty to make you drink more. And as someone that doesn't drink, you can only drink so much diet cola or, you know, soda water. So having a salty snack is the worst thing in the world. Having something like that is far better.
Good for kids as well. Really good for kids, I think.
Yeah.
Great in their little lunchbox. I know, again, that you like the food eating thing, Paul. And we've got these beautiful sort of, I don't know, cardboardy lovely packages. And Emily and Simon have very kindly taken the noodles that they make and they've made you a little bit of lunch, late lunch, early tea.
I've been looking at that for ages.
So I'm looking at it and I've got cashew nuts that obviously have been slightly grilled or fried or whatever is on the outside. We've got some look like peppers. They've just made you lunch, actually. Look at it.
Fabulous.
And they've even bought the noodles.
And there's chopsticks
the
and everything.
Chopsticks and everything, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to open that?
Yeah, can I?
Go on then, you have a try. And I'm going to talk to Emily and Simon. Before I do that, I just want to tell anybody listening that we've come across these amazing pizza scissors. Would you believe? Pizza scissors?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're great. They're really, really good. And we're giving away a pair. So if anybody wants to, and these pizza scissors are about 40 quid. I mean, they're not cheap, chaps. So if anybody wants to just enter our competition for some pizza scissors today, they just need to get on Twitter. They just need to retweet us or follow us. And on Twitter, we're at Food Talk Show. Make sure you use the old hashtag Food Talk. But if you want to look at these amazing pizza scissors, go on Twitter and have a good look and enter the competition. So
sorry about crunching there.
So you're crunching cashew nuts.
So I'm unboxing this, so I'm going to stop. There's a gorgeous pair of
lovely
chopsticks, black chopsticks, and they come in a little packet that says sweet and sour coconut noodle salad. Is that what's in the box?
I think the recipe might not be exactly that.
It might be a different recipe. But, so anyway, but it's got a recipe for protein noodles on there.
That's the recipe you're going to make at home.
Right, okay. Paul. So, and I've got a box here of noodles and, as Sue said, some
cashew
nuts.
Right, so you
eat.
I'm not going to ask
Can
you,
I eat now?
I'm not going to ask you any questions right at this point
Thank
in
you.
Time, Paul.
Thank you.
So these noodles are called umi noodles. That's double O-M-I.
Mm-hmm.
Don't look at him eating, please, people, because Ooh. It's just terrible. We had an event last week where we unboxed these in front of an audience and we got an audience to trial them. Everybody without fail said that they were lovely. They have 75% less carbs than normal noodles and they're gluten-free, low in sugars, low in saturated fats. And they're being sold online through Ocado. And even the people who have been ordering on Ocado have given it a 5-star recommendation. So please, could you tell us how on earth you make noodles that effectively are 75% less carbs?
We've basically we've identified this gap in the market to replace egg noodles with a healthier version of so with much less carbs with high protein and the basis of the product we're using fish and then other ingredients
fish. You said fish.
Yeah, I said fish.
Fish. Okay, so you're taking fish protein.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't taste fishy, but you're taking fish protein. Mm-hmm. And essentially what it means is that the noodles are protein-based as opposed to wheat carbohydrate-based.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's MSC certified fish, so fully sustainable, caught in Alaska, caught fresh, and within 24 hours that's processed and mixed with the other ingredients to create this wonderful tasty noodle that is much more healthy for you than regular egg noodles because it's lower in carbs and also high
Good
in protein.
You. Yeah. Nobody else is doing this at all anyway. You've patented this, haven't you?
Yeah. The technology is patented and it's a really, really unique unique idea. You know, we've spent 2 years developing the product and done a lot of research in the market. We've just launched 4 weeks into trading with Ocado. So it's a very exciting time and we're pretty excited about the future for umi.
Okay, so when I'm looking at these noodles, they look exactly the same as the normal egg noodles. So if you had a packet, can I just say that Paul's still eating and he hasn't stopped yet?
I've nearly finished.
Oh no, he's got a whole pack. So they look exactly the same. You can't tell the difference, I don't think. I've had these before. I can't taste much difference between normal noodles either.
Yeah.
If anything, I would say they've got a little bit more taste to them, because sometimes noodles can be quite bland. But you would never be able to tell, would you?
But that's the idea, you know. Everyone loves the noodles and the noodle market is in sort of 9% growth over the last year. And it's a great convenient way of eating.
So, Paul, now you can breathe now. It's the first breath you've taken. Can we have your view? Because I know you like noodles.
They were horrible. No, they weren't. They were fabulous.
Fabulous.
Mm. I've eaten a whole box. How picky is that?
You can't tell that they're fish, though, can you? You get a slight... I don't think you can, really. I would love to have those in a soup. You know, like we talk about Wagamamas or something. And lose
like
noodles.
Ramen. Yeah.
Fabulous, fabulous.
The pre-prepared box that I've got here has got a sauce with it, like a sweet and sour sauce with it, and cashews and peppers. It is absolutely gorgeous, and I'm not blowing smoke. It is absolutely fabulous. I could live on that quite easily. I could have that for every meal.
75% less carbs, Paul.
That means you can make up for that with beer or something afterwards.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Drink, so, but it means that you've got a really high protein meal there. Stick some fish in or some steak or something.
It's fabulously tasty. If you hadn't have told me, it wouldn't have dawned on me that they weren't egg noodles. To be quite frank, it just wouldn't. I know I ate it really quickly, and I was being a pig, but I couldn't discern any meaningful difference apart from the fact it tasted really good.
That's great. I mean, that's totally the idea, is that you can just swap out your noodles that you're eating at the moment. You don't have to come up with new recipes and things. Whatever you cook your noodles with at the moment,
you can
switch these in. You can have them cold.
Presumably, they cook the same way as conventional noodles.
Yeah, so we've got these packs here, and essentially you can just stick them in the microwave if that's what you do. You can fry them in a wok like you do. So, I mean, it's exactly what you're saying, isn't it, Simon? You just do whatever you normally do. You just use these instead.
Yeah, that's exactly it, yeah.
I think, Paul, I think what we're finding is we used to see stuff where there'd be gluten-free or something would be taken out, and the taste would be different, and it would have a taste of its own. Do you not think we're really, even just in the last year, getting more and more products where you actually can't tell? And so why would you not have the healthier version?
You know, I can be rude about things, certain, you know. And earlier in the year, we spent a lot of time at the Specialty and Free From show. And quite frankly, quite a few of the products there were kind of cardboard covered in chocolate. Because people have just, tried to...
spent their life work trying to...
I know. But one of the things I do love, when you come across a product like this, and we did come across quite a few products, where people have deliberately engineered a product that is free from all the other things that you don't want it to have, but it still tastes good, you've really cracked it then, because it then doesn't matter whether you have an allergy or not, you're still going to eat the product. And that's one of the great things about these kind of products, is that it suits everyone. So you don't have to have, the person that's gluten-free sitting there eating these while everybody else is tucking into something else. It's not necessary.
And I think that's where these sort of things really come in, come into their own. Mm. Emily, I know you studied Spanish at the University of Leeds.
Oh, right.
Have I got that right? Yeah. And see, we have lovely researchers here. And I don't understand. How did you go to Leeds University and do Spanish and then, suddenly end up doing noodles made out of fish protein?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been in the food industry. Probably it started because of the Spanish. Actually, I was in fresh produce for a number of years working with Spanish farmers.
Now I get the connection.
Yeah. And then, just carried on through the food industry and work. That's the kind of the connection. So
that makes sense. So you understood how the food industry worked. You must be understanding what buyers are looking for then. And that's a great advantage, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I think also over the last couple of years, I've been selling pasta. So I've been learning a little bit more about the category of pasta and actually understanding health trends. And there's this movement towards lower carbs. And also, obviously, in terms of the protein, we're surrounded by brands who are developing new products with higher protein content. And so that's kind of where the whole idea came from. We saw this gap in the market, and Simon and I have been working together for a couple of years now, and developing a product like this really, really made sense. And
so are you working on a fish-based pasta? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, we are now. I mean, that's not the focus of it. The focus of it is all about the health messages and that. Mm. But effectively, yeah.
And Simon, what do you think of the sort of the marketing of this? Because often I think if you've got something where you've got a product where it's fish-based, that's quite a difficult dilemma, isn't it? Because the story, in essence, could be this is sustainable fish. Oh, we made it into noodles. But that actually isn't the story of this. The story of this is these are noodles and they've got loads of protein in, less carbs. So it's quite a difficult marketing path to tread, isn't it?
It is a challenge, yeah. I think I was interested when Michael said earlier about, what were the only arguments that you have or the only heated discussions you have, and that's probably a discussion that we had in the beginning. But, I think we're really comfortable that there are a lot of different protein sources out there, soya and pea protein and many others. But I think it comes back to the point, Paul, that you made, that we didn't want a product that was compromised, that felt compromised. And we think using fish has turned out to be the right solution to get the proteins and still have the really great texture, you know, the bite that you want from a noodle. Mm. You can get really watery noodles and a lot of different textures. So we really wanted to make sure that the product really delivered. You know, when people ate it, they just enjoyed eating it.
So I'm really interested in how you decide that actually fish could be a good basis for noodles and whatever. Where on earth do you go from there? You know, oh yeah, I'll buy a factory, or I'm sure they didn't do that. But you know, how do you go that little next step? Because there's lots and lots of people who've got great ideas, but then taking it and getting it into a cardo and going the next step is a pretty big step.
It is a big step. I mean, you know, we were working with a production site that had experience of using Japanese techniques and the Japanese are amazing with fish and all the different things they can do with fish, and fish protein's incredible, and you know, really kind of premium stuff there in Japan. So there was all that. There was a lot of that knowledge around.
So what you're saying is, go and find an expert who understands this in the first place. You know, there's always going to be somebody out there who you can develop with. You don't develop it on your own. Go and find somebody to help you.
I think collaboration is massively important. So, I mean, for us, there's Spanish people involved, Japanese engineers involved in the patented the kit in the first place. So it is about finding experts, I think. And, you know, everyone who starts out, you don't know everything at the beginning. So you've got to find
just got to learn
people
quick.
That know some more than you, yeah.
And what's the next steps, Emily, for this? I mean, obviously, Paul was talking about pasta, as in, you know, like spaghetti and all that sort of stuff. Is that the natural next step, or would you look to extend it in another way?
I think initially, you know, there's so much scope to sell noodles in this country, so that's our focus for year one, certainly. We've literally only just started, and we're just in Ocado, so we want to really be expanding our distribution into retail, but not just retail. Like we've talked about Wagamama, then if you go down any street in London now, you've got Itsu, you've got Wasabi. There are so many healthy eating places, and even sort of Pret's doing noodle pots, and there's this whole trend towards eating bowls of food. So I think food service and business to business, there's so many business opportunities for a product like this. So we don't want too quickly to move on to the next step, but equally there is an awful lot of scope with the
sure. So get a really good foothold in the market. Is that right?
Absolutely.
If you think everywhere you see a noodle, we'd like to see an umi noodle, and that's a lot of places, and really an increasing number of
and
places.
And why not?
That's a good business plan, isn't it? Everywhere you see a noodle, I want there to be an umi noodle.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really good. I'm just asking Michael here to have a taste. So he's just opened the box, and he was unashamedly just stuck his head right in there with the old chopsticks.
Well, I find it rude actually that you've asked me to stop eating these because
it's not acceptable. That's why I ate it quickly, because I know what she's like. She'll stop me eating it.
What do you think?
No, it's just remarkable that it tastes like a noodle. It's great.
cod-free.
Well, no, you've spoken a little bit about the fish element here, and so I was curious as to how that would come through, but it's not there at all. So I understand entirely why that's not the message that you're putting across, and that you're looking at, you know, this is a good healthy noodle, and that's the main thing that's there.
Do you want to take the microphone away now? Because I see you're itching to get back in there, aren't you?
You stick your face back in the box.
Yeah, just stick your face back in.
And I want to ask you about this as well, because I've just eaten the whole thing that you've just given me. Sorry, once I started, there was no way I was stopping that. That was fabulous. But that's not normally your product, is it? You don't normally make ready-made food?
Not at the moment, no. We're just we're producing this one pack at the moment, which is two portions of...
It's one pool portion, two normal portions.
Can I make a suggestion?
Oh, dear.
For your next product, can you make me some more of those boxes? Because they're fabulous. I mean, being serious, you know, that's the kind of thing you would buy in Pret, isn't it, at lunchtime? is a pre-made box like that of noodles. It was a really simple dish. It was noodles, cashew nuts, peppers, and some
fresh
sweet
coriander.
Yeah, and some sweet and sour. It was absolutely fabulous. It was really gorgeous, really tasty, thoroughly enjoyable, a great lunchtime meal. And it, you know, you could sell that absolutely anywhere, and people would lap it up. So love it.
Mm-hmm. Great
I think point. I think you've got a big decision, haven't you, about where you're going to take it next, and that is a really big decision. But I think you're right. Getting it absolutely everywhere as much as you can, getting all your distribution sorted.
Yeah,
packaging looks great
at the moment. Where are you sourcing? How are you getting these noodles made for you? Are you outsourced it to someone, or are you doing it in your kitchen, or how's it working?
No, we have a production site in Spain who are our partners in this business.
They're making the noodles there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got technology from Japan and you've got people who are great at understanding fish, you know, Spanish in terms of preparing fish.
Absolutely.
Get the best experts you can. Is that right?
That's it. It's a beautiful place, actually. It's kind of in the Basque Country in northern Spain. And
I presume you have
Emily
to pop
takes
up.
Her surfboard when she goes over there.
I suppose you have to pop over to check that everything's going okay every, you know, 6 weeks or something. Yeah, that's a real shame. That's a real shame. So we reckon that the protein noodles are a definite yes.
They're a definite hit.
Paul.
They're a definite hit. Yep.
So that's Umi, OOMI. And you can get that on Ocado. Have we got that right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Anywhere else?
At the moment, no. But hopefully by January, we'll be wider distribution.
We'll be everywhere.
We're working on it.
It's uminoodles.com and you can find out about that. Some really nice story stuff on there about how you started, isn't there?
Yeah, there's some great recipes as well. So
good recipes.
Yeah, check them out.
I haven't actually seen the packet of noodles because I was too busy stuffing my face out of the box. I think reading upside down, it says ready to eat as well. So you don't actually have to cook them. You could eat them straight out of the packet.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, leave that there.
No, leave that there. You've eaten yours. Get off. That's mine. Yes, when we did this event last week, but people were just eating it straight out of the packet. It was absolutely fine. Nicer in a salad, obviously, or in a soup. Mm. And then we've got Michael Minch Dixon, who was talking about snacked fruit jerky. And you can get that from Michael.
So we're on Ocado
as well.
As nature intended.
Oh, look, I finished that as well.
And if you want to find out more about Michael and also his friend Ilana and how they managed to get this stuff together, that's at snacked.co.uk. And I think my favourite was the blueberry banana-y one.
Yes, that was my favourite. So I liked all of them. But the blueberry banana.
Can I just say,
apple.
Listeners, that's because he's taken another wedge of that noodles. So it serves him right that it's gone down the wrong way. Can't speak.
That's eating too quickly so that you can't get your hands on it.
Exactly. So really enjoyed that and good luck with the protein noodles. I would just like to do another shout out to the amazing indoors micro pub. How gin is sort of moving forward. And I think it's the first time where I've been somewhere and I really didn't understand that gin widely can taste of the most amazing stuff, from rhubarb to... It's also the first time she made me a gin with black pepper in it. She did a little squirt of black pepper and a strawberry. So, and that was just incredible as well, see? So you learn things all the time.
You make it sound very desirable.
It was just great. Great fun as well. Really, really good.
And I like the idea of it being a micro pub and gin bar in Sandgate.
Yeah. I mean,
I think we're all going to be heading down there, basically, after the show.
I think we should do it after the show.
gin is massive in Spain as well. I think I'm right in saying that the Spanish consume more gin per head than anyone else in the world.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm really surprised by that.
I think you just made that up. But anyway, I'll believe you. So definitely. And I think the future of micro pubs is good and it's big. And people are a bit sick of, well, I suppose it depends what you want, but I don't want to go in and have a sky huge television, screen in the pub. Thanks very much. You know, I would like to go and have a chat with people.
Sure.
And that's what's happening, which is really good.
Absolutely.
So, ready for next week? You're not here next week, I don't think.
No,
I'm
chairing the Kent Get Social event next Thursday.
And if anybody hasn't heard of that, it probably has hundreds of people go to it. It's called Get Social. It's only in Kent, but... you'll really learn about what's new in social media. Is it free, I think? Tickets are free.
Yeah, it's free to get in. Last time I looked, there was 480 tickets sold. Yeah,
and it's a really good event. And I think we've got the head of something, NATO or something.
The head of NATO is the keynote speaker, which was interesting.
Really
based on last year where we had someone from the MOD showing us live footage of them bombing somewhere, which was interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I'll be here with somebody else. I don't know who I'm going to be presenting with. Perhaps if anybody wants to present with me, just give me a call. And you can hear us again on, well, through the Channel Radio website or through foodtalk.co.uk.
Cool.
Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you very much. I thoroughly enjoyed my afternoon snack of noodles and fruit. And I'm sated now.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Emily and Simon. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah. We'll be back next week. Bye now.
Bye.